everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy, Howdy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Tom, you know, this time of year, and here we are, Wednesday, October 19th, 2022, normally you look at our forecast in Tucson, and it's pretty much, you know, 80s, 50s, high, low, and there is no rain in the forecast. But pretty much every week now, there's been rain in the forecast. This time, it's this weekend.
It's been typically around the weekend, seems to me.
Weird.
What that has to do with anything, I don't know, but there you go.
And midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. I love October. This time of year, a lot of the leaves are peaking in the high country. And in places like where I grew up in the Midwest, this is really, really beautiful time of year. The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station that we are coming to you on is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Call letters KVOI, The Voice. We have our live streaming at buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com when we do our telephone interviews. And today, we'll be doing pretty much exclusively all of our interviews by phone. The phone line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Dustin Williams, midway through his second 4-year term as school superintendent of Pima County. Superintendent Williams, how are you?
Bill Buckmaster, how are you? Glad to be on with you and all your listeners as always.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Tell me, the vouchers, this voucher program, the school voucher expansion, what are you seeing here in Pima County education? What has the impact been, Dustin Williams?
Well, Governor Ducey and the majority Republicans in the state legislature have passed a measure. It went into law about 30 days ago, the end of September, where we have universal vouchers now. That's $7,000 for every homeschool student and $7,000 for every private school student. We are seeing a massive amount of phone calls, and that's going to be a lot of money. It's going to be a lot of money coming from the general fund. Definitely a concern for fiscal management. That's going to be something to really look at with these vouchers.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that, the fiscal management. You're talking about this is going to be a real challenge, Superintendent, for all of the superintendents in the Pima County school districts. Is that what I'm hearing?
You know, for district schools, it's going to be not much. We're not going to see a big exodus. We're not going to see a big exodus of students from charter schools either, probably. But you are going to see a large portion of parents signing up for the universal voucher that are in private schools. And you're going to see a large amount of families that are in the homeschool community signing up for the universal voucher. And it's going to really ultimately, it's going to be a burden on the budget for the state, is the concern that we look at when we're looking at the finances. Ultimately, this could cost the state $1 billion a year straight out of the general fund. I just don't know how that gets paid for. Surpluses are nice, and we know we have one, but we see recessions coming around the corner. These are big dollars, and where do those dollars come from? The other concern is the transparency and the accountability of these vouchers. With district schools and charter schools, you can follow the student. You can see how they're progressing with attendance. You can see how they're progressing on federal and state tests. With voucher dollars, we can't see anything. So the accountability and the transparency is a massive challenge for where your public dollars are going. And when you have a depleted funded system, we all know we're, you know, always last in the ranks for educational funding. To add an entire new funding system to our already depleted educational system, I think it's an error. I don't think we should have went this direction for universal expansions The voters voted on this in 2019. They did not want to do this. We all believe in choice. We like parents to have the ability to go to homeschool, private school, charter school, district school. But when you're using public dollars, those dollars need to stay in the public schools.
I don't like this at all, this lack of transparency, Dustin Williams. This is not a good thing for the taxpayers who are really, you know, they're picking up the bill for this. I think the legislature needs to revisit this. Would you agree with that in the 23 session?
You know, Bill, this is I'm going to agree with you 100%. Here's a scenario. So it's $7,000, and that's the minimum, and it's per child. So if you have four, you know, kids at home, they're all being homeschooled, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. We fully support that. That's $28,000, though. That's $28,000 that ultimately I don't get to know everything about the student, whereas if I go to any district school or charter school, I have the right to go in there and ask. Matter of fact, it's mandated that schools let you know what's going on with those students. And that's it's also public money. So as you pay your taxes, Bill, and as all the taxpayers do, those public dollars are not meant to go to private entities. That was not how we built our system in finance. We see it as a not being fiscal responsible here. And it is a big concern. Ultimately, if you looked at the numbers of this, if you played this scenario out, not that this could happen or will happen, but if you played the number game, it has the possibility of bankrupting Arizona.
Wow. Wow, that is serious. How about the shortage of teachers this time around? What's this school year looking like in Pima County, Dustin Williams?
When you see the overall picture of school, this is our, it really feels, Bill, like our first normal year back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have everybody up and running. There is a great feel. The burnout is still there, but at least we're in person. Students are learning. They're catching up on all of their general ed studies. You can go and catch a Friday night football game. You can listen to the marching bands. You can hear the crowds. It really is starting to have that good feel of school back. We are very, very pleased. We have a lot of work to do, a lot of catching up to do, but we're happy where we are going into this next year. It's going to be good. This is going to be a good full year. We're happy.
Do you like this SB 1159? The governor signed that it eases some of the requirements, further easing, to increase new teachers into the pipeline in Arizona.
Yeah, I do like it. It's a measure to help with the teacher shortage. Unfortunately, it's a Band-Aid that needs sutures. The reality is this industry is still starting people off at 38,000 to 42,000.
Yeah.
And so when you're going to be a professional in today's world with the astronomical hikes and inflation and the cost of everything that is out there, and you're looking at professions, that price tag is not turning a lot of heads. And that's why you're just seeing that shortage of teachers that is just still staying where it is. We're not seeing that level increase. That is a big concern with all of our schools. The other part, Bill, is not just the teacher shortage, it's the support staff. It's all the champions around the school that do the day-to-day operations, like our bus drivers, our cafeteria workers, our parapros, our monitors. And a lot of those positions are still stuck at that $12.80 an hour. And that is where we are very concerned, because you can start looking at other jobs and big corporations, and those starting salaries are starting to creep to the $15, $17 an hour range. And those positions are important. This is all about our kids. It's about our future. So if we want to make sure that we have a robust future with well-educated individuals, we got to pay some money into this industry and get a different direction going. And hopefully these next governors coming through and the next state legislature can make education the number one priority in this state going forward.
And again, before we let you go, Dustin Williams, tell us about your portfolio. What are you charged with looking over what?
Yeah, so we live in the world of finance. We manage about $1.8 billion a year that comes through taxes and bonds and overrides, which we hope you all support with our schools out there. And we are we divvy it out. We give schools all our money. We don't have any authority on that money, but we do make sure that we check the balances and we look at the books and make sure everyone's got the right dollars where they go. We also run all the bonds and overrides. We're an election department. We do the governing board elections as well. We have a lot of governing board members coming up, approximately 58, 60 right in there. And so know your governing board members. They're the ones that are in charge of your schools. We also do professional development. So when schools need help, you know, want better math teachers, want better principals, they want to do special education, gifted programs, community share, business education partnerships, internships, anything with professional development, we lend a hand in there. And then lastly, we run the schools that people are incarcerated, the schools, kids that might be at the juvenile detention center or the adult jail. Those are our schools. Those are the ones that are our kids, and we work on reengaging them in the community to be productive members. And that goes 365 days a year, and we want to hear from everyone. Anyone's got a good idea, anybody that wants to get involved and be positive in this community for kids, go to schools.pima.gov. That's where you can find us.
Michael, before I, excuse me, I had someone just sent me an email, a Michael, wanting me to ask Dustin, and I am out of time, but if you could give us this listener a quick response, ask your guest if schools should have to compete for their funding. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, competition within public entities is not a great idea. We already see what's happening with schools competing. The problem is the playing field is not equal. So when you have a district school, charter school, and a private school, the mechanisms for how people are accepted into schools and all of the factors that are involved are not equal. So if you had the same playing field that went all the way around, I think you could re-explore the idea. But when it comes to kids and education, what we want to do is we just want to invest. Right now, we have got to get out of this last in the nation per pupil funding, start being players in the United States, put Arizona on the map and do what's right and build these leaders.
All right. Dustin Williams, the school superintendent for Pima County. Thank you, Dustin.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Mona's Danish Bakery. We love Mona's. They're open right now for lunch. Mona's is home of the Danish Kringle. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Folks love Mona's. They're in line, actually, when they open the doors at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday for the Great Mona's Breakfast, opening at 7 on Sunday morning. They are taking Mondays off, well-deserved. So it's monasdanishbakery.com. Up next, we'll be talking to one of our two dozen contributors, Dr. William Doley of Archaeology Southwest. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, My air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization based here in Tucson, has launched its 16th season of Archaeology Southwest's Archaeology Cafe programming. Let's bring in now on the live line Dr. Bill Doley, the president and CEO of Archaeology Southwest. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Very good, Bill. Nice to be back.
Tell me a little bit about the concept, the Archaeology Cafe concept, Bill Doley.
Sure. We're borrowing. We borrowed a long time ago from folks over in Europe who were having these science cafes. They would get people together as in a small restaurant, a pub, something like that. And so a scientist who had all kinds of excitement about his or her research would sit in an informal setting there, and people might have something to eat or a little bit of something to drink. And it was a very low intensity in terms of no jargon, just share the enthusiasm with the audience. The audience could then start talking back and forth. So it's an informal way for the science community to reach out to the public, the interested public, and spread the word around. So we adapted that to, instead of, you know, a generic science cafe, we made it an archaeology cafe.
And you're back face-to-face after the COVID years.
Well, no, we're still, we did a dozen years of face-to-face, both in Tucson and Phoenix, and we had to move that out of a restaurant format, and then we spent some time in the Loft Cinema, but when COVID came around, we all know, we retreated to our home spots, and but so that actually, though, created new opportunities for us. So we're still going, presenting these digital now, and that's the that does two things. It allows us to bring in speakers from a much larger geography, and the same for our audience. So we're now serving an audience of sometimes 200, 300, 400 people, whereas in our little restaurant-based earlier cafes, we would overwhelm the restaurant when 75 people came.
Sure.
So we're continuing with the digital Zoom based cafes, and I think people will actually enjoy what we've got to offer this season.
So what's a good way to find out about the lineup and to get involved?
Yeah, well, we have a theme, And it's called Better For It, and it's a focus on research conceived in collaboration with community. And I think this is an opportunity to find out how diverse archaeology really is. It's not just chasing one kind of artifact or a dig in some exotic place. We're working with researchers who have developed a relationship with a community. There's an African-American public archaeology, a gentleman who graduated from here at University of Arizona is working in southeastern U.S. Chinese railroad workers are the focus of some folks up in Utah. Both the first and the last in our series focused on Diné or Navajo archaeology, so it's really diverse. And what we want these speakers to share is, sometimes it's really hard. It takes a lot of extra effort to work in collaboration with the community. But once you've invested that upfront kind of getting to know each other and finding common interests and pursuing a mutually held research goal, it really starts to pay off. New information comes in. People really value the outcome. So that's what we're trying to focus on. And it's really easy for people to get signed up. It's free. It's an 8-cafe series, and for new listeners or people just hearing about this today, you did miss the first one, which is on Diné or Navajo archaeology in the Chaco Canyon area. But we also post these after the fact on our YouTube channel, so you haven't missed it if you weren't there for the first cafe. And to get signed up, our website is at www.archaeologysouthwest.org. And on that landing page at the top under Things to Do, just click on that, and then a little drop-down menu sends you to an opportunity to click on Archaeology Cafe online. And then all these this season's options are laid out there with brief descriptions, and you click and provide your email address, and you'll get a quote digital ticket or invitation sent back to your email.
And it looks like you're doing one a month.
Yes, it's on the first Tuesday of each month, okay. Except for January. But yes, and they're always at 6 p.m. on that first Tuesday. And we keep them to an hour. And the nice thing is that even though you aren't in the room with the speaker, you can submit questions. So you just type in a question, and we try to spend about 30 minutes, sometimes up to 35, of presentation. And then we get into that much more informal part of, like, I have a question from what you said here, or what about that? So it becomes an interactive and I think creative conversation as we run through the course of the hour there.
I see one of the sessions, this one's actually in April, is about restorative justice in Canada. I just came back from a week up in the Canadian Rockies. Of course, that's a huge issue about the Indigenous schools and the way some of the students were treated in those schools. It's becoming more of an issue in this country too, with the change in leadership at the Department of Interior, Bill Dolley.
Yes, and I'm glad you highlighted that that April presentation, because Keisha Supernaut is the presenter there, and she's an incredibly good speaker, there were residential schools in the U.S., these same issues of missing children. And this is a way she illustrates how she works with communities there in Canada to help, you know, that process of locating these missing children, the process of healing that this is all a bigger part of. And, you know, that's a theme that, is very much active and a front burner here in this country as well. It's trying to bring people together. And that's why this idea of collaboration is so important, that we're not doing something for just a super esoteric scientist's idea. We're trying to, in this series, focus on things that are mutually of interest to communities, and it works.
Archaeology Cafe, if folks even just Google that, that will take you to really your website.
Yep, I tried that out, and that was even easier than typing out that long archaeologysouthwest.org. And it was, came out as the first item on a Google search. So that's another simple way to get there. And we hope people will come.
And Bill, I've carved out about 30 seconds to tell to have you tell people about your organization, Archaeology Southwest. And I'm a member of the organization. Just tell folks a little bit about your organization quickly.
Sure. We're based in Tucson. We cover the whole U.S. Southwest and Mexican Northwest, and we do preservation archaeology. One of our key goals is to connect the places and stories of the past to the people and values of the present. So, we have a really nice way to get introduced to us is to go to that website, and on that front landing page, you can sign up for a free weekly little digital newsletter called Southwest Archaeology Today, and that'll keep you informed on a lot of things that are going on all across the U.S. in preservation archaeology.
Bill, we very much appreciate what you do. Dr. Bill Doley, President and CEO, Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit based right here in Tucson. Bill, great talking with you. Hope to see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity to join you today, Bill.
Thanks Bye a now. Lot. All right. We're going to take a break right here. Midway point of the midweek edition of Buckmaster.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. We love green things. What's not to love? They've got the parking lot sale extended. It was such a big hit. It's been going on now a couple of weeks, and of course it's a big hit. They've got great prices right now over at 3384 East River Road. This is a very, very popular time of year to put some beautiful fall flowers that will do well, perhaps even up into the first freeze and beyond. So this is the time of year to get the color in the garden. The 13-acre site at Green Things has everything you could imagine for your garden and beautiful accessories. At Zocalo Village, beautiful dining room and kitchen sets carved out of beautiful woods like mesquite. Some of them are done right here in Tucson. Here are your websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They've been in business for more than 50 years. They're open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, of which we are doing pretty much exclusively today, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on to the live line and the Ward 2 Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Councilman, how are you, sir?
Very well.
How is school?
Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's always a pleasure. We try to get you on, and we've been pretty reliable about it every month. How is school going? What is your role this semester?
Well, I'm teaching PE this year. I'm having a ball. I'm also teaching a SPED class with PE, and I'm learning a lot there. So it's a really incredible experience. I think, you know, when it comes to teaching, you learn something new every year. And then I've also been really involved with our school's basketball team this year because my son's playing at another school. And so I've been involved in that eighth grade league this year that TUSD does every year, and it's been pretty neat. We've got so many great people like Dale Lopez who've been doing that type of work since I was a kid, and it's still a very compelling and very exciting time, that first semester middle school TUSD basketball league.
I have known you for decades now, and I don't think I've ever asked you this question. Why did you become an educator, Paul Cunningham?
Well, there's multiple reasons. So I started out as a juvenile probation officer, and while I was a juvenile probation officer, I moved to a program called Safe School Probation. And what Safe School Probation was basically designed to do was to engage kids who had not engaged the juvenile justice system yet and try to keep them out of engaging the juvenile justice system. So you worked on things like truancy, and you worked on things like juvenile runaways and status offenses, kids who, you know, fifth and sixth graders who had tobacco or were getting in fights at school. You wanted to engage them at a very young age and say, hey, look, you know, if this behavior continues and you can't adapt or modify, we may have a situation where you're going to be pending charges in juvenile court. And so we drafted a program, and I worked at a middle school for about 6 years as the school probation officer. So I did that work and wrote several different programs designed to do exactly that, be prevention type programs that identified both high-risk youth, but even just your standard kid who sometimes gets in with the wrong crowd for a little bit or is at the wrong place at the wrong time, and make them aware of how kids ended up engaged in the juvenile justice system. And so we did that for a while, and then I went back and worked at juvenile court. When I was appointed to the city council, one of the things was that you couldn't be a city council person and be a juvenile probation officer. Originally, I had planned to do both. And I had even upon applying to be the city council person, because my city council member had resigned. I had even gone to the probation director to say, hey, is there a chance I can do both? And they said, hey, you know what? We'll work with you. We want to support you in your work to the community. But apparently some folks weren't really happy about that, and they filed a complaint with the city attorney, and the city attorney had to make a recommendation, and his recommendation was, you know, it's probably not a good idea. Now, there were other people serving the courts and serving on town councils around the state, but it was a little different situation. And in my situation, I felt the city attorney made a good choice. You really can't be a probation officer and serve on the city council. I mean, I can't show up to someone's house and say, hey, I'm sorry I'm arresting your kid, but don't forget to vote for me. I mean, you know, it just doesn't work. So as I moved on in my career, I looked at some of the things that I could do. I had a master's in social work, and I tried to go into social work, but again, there's so many lines that blend when you're a city council person and a social worker. I mean, there's way too much intertwinement. But in reading some of the statutes, quite a few legislatures also serve as educators. So I went and got my certification and became a long-term sub and then a teacher. I was at Sunnyside School District at first. And Sunnyside School District is interesting because it was separate. It was across town from Ward 2, because I didn't want to be in a situation where I was saying, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't want to be in a parent-teacher conference and telling a parent how their kid was doing, and then all of a sudden, have them ask me about city council things. But after about 5 or 6 or 7 years on the job as a teacher, I wanted to be a little closer to my community, be a little more connected to the schools in my area that I represent. And moreover, I felt that I had the experience as both a teacher and a council person at that time that I could keep the two separate, but also leverage the two so that I was more effective at both jobs. And so that's why I moved over to Gridley, which is in Ward 2 and on the east side. And I participate both in the community pieces and the improvement of the school as both a parent and a teacher, and I think it makes me a better council person. And that's the long answer to a very short question, but I've wanted to work with kids from day one. I remember when I was 21 years old, I was out there coaching roller hockey with the YMCA, and it's gone on ever since then.
Let me ask you one more education question. I really didn't plan to spend this first segment with you talking about education, but I'm just curious, do you identify kids that are ready to fall through the cracks? Is that more of an experience thing that you have learned over the years to look for some warning signs of kids who really need a little extra attention, Paul Cunningham?
You get better at it as your career goes on, as long as you're doing your job. I think one of the things that happens is that kids can make you feel like $1,000,000, and they can be sometimes the biggest letdown when you put so much work into a kid and they're still not figuring it out after a couple of years and working with them. And so that's what happens to a lot of teachers who end up getting burnt out, is that, they'll put so much effort into one or two kids and they'll end up getting burned, and then they'll be burned out a little bit. And that stuff happens. As you get older, you really have a better perspective in kind of not only understanding where the kid is, but kind of trying to do the right things to prepare that kid for the long game and remember to engage that kid when they are ready. I mean, in other words, you got to meet them where they are. And so it's a function of all kinds of different risk factors that are out there, but it's easy to find, it's easy to know. And some kids, you have to accept the idea that at this point, they're not ready to be worked with by a teacher per se. They have so many other things going on in their lives, and those things need to stable before, you know, you can't. I remember when I first got into probation, we'd go to court, we'd tell a kid, you need to go to school every day and be there on time and have great behavior. And that kid had not done anything like that for 5 years. It magically wasn't going to just happen because a judge told you to do that in court. There's so much more to that. And as juvenile court has evolved and as school districts have evolved, we've gotten much better at that. And there are way more success stories of kids being able to engage a quality public school system and doing better. And that's happened around the country. And, you know, to some degree, there's been varying success in different school districts here in Tucson, where we've seen kids that, you know, 50, 60 years ago, you might have written them off, but there's a support system in this community now. And it's important that we support our public schools, because that investment really does pay off.
All right. Stay with us, Paul. We're going to take a break right here. Speaking with Tucson City Councilman and educator Paul Cunningham, the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is such a perfect time of year in the American Southwest. Silver City in the Southwest portion of the Land of Enchantment would make a terrific getaway this weekend. It's only about a three-hour drive. Look at that temperature, mid-60s, and a really nice day over there. That's perfect hiking weather in the Gila National Wilderness. And when you do some hiking, I bet if you were to go over there this weekend, you would see some very pretty autumn color in the high country in Silver City. Start your planning now by going to southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our conversation with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham, Democrat, Ward number 2. Paul, could you give our listeners an update on the Reed Park ball field controversy or dust up? We were talking about, I think the last time you were with us last month, most of the 5 ball fields west of High Corbett Field on the park's north side would be eliminated under this proposed Reed Park update.
So the way I understand it is I think there's a total of 6 fields.
Okay.
4 of them are in what's called a quad. A quad is when there's a baseball field with a kind of a center area and then the 4 surround it. So you have access to all 4 fields at once. The fields at Reed Park are what are called full-size fields. They're juniors and seniors fields or collegiate fields that are 90-foot bases. That is the only quad we have in our inventory. We went through this process to try to be as inclusive as possible, and they talked about this reimagining of Reed Park, which is a very good exercise, and it's what needs to happen as we collaborate and try to find great new uses and the best things for public space. What happened was there was some type of disconnect between the baseball community and the reimagining group, and for whatever reason, the thing came back, and the most favorable recommendation to baseball had 2 fields left. That was it. They cut 60% of the total, and they got rid of the quad. Well, I'm not sure that's the best course of action, and quite frankly, it's a little interesting to me that the way I understand it is that in the quads and High Corbett combined between practices and events, there were like 1,300 events on the quad and High Corbett alone last year.
Wow.
That's a lot of use.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's an accurate number, but that's the number that I was given. And I was like, that means they would have had to have like 5 events a day. So I think they might be talking about practices at each each field practice individually. There's 6 fields, the number of games. I think they're thinking about practices, games, and and reservations of all 6 of those fields and High Corbett, which High Corbett gets 365 events because it's leased to the U of A 365 days a year. So I think that number's a little inflated.
But still, it's a high use area.
It's a considerable amount of use. And so we really need to let the baseball folks kind of have a discussion here. And I'm on record as already saying that getting rid of the quad is something that's not really I'm not good with that. That's almost a non-starter for me. We can't, unless we're going to replace the quad and figure out how much that's going to cost and all the other things that go with that, I'm just not in good. I'm not as excited about that. So I think we need to take a look at other opportunities for open space in Reed Park, but the quad isn't the baseball quad's probably not the one. Remember, it's not just local events. We have a collegiate junior college tournament there. We have baseball camps conducted by Arizona Baseball there. We host the Korean teams there. And so I think we probably need to reconsider whether or not we're going to eliminate at any point the quad at Reed Park.
All right, let's go to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Chuck, go ahead. You're with Paul Cunningham.
Yes, Councilman Cunningham. The city council is proposing raising our garbage fees, parking fees, fees for the Ramadas at our parks, and various other fees. Councilman Cunningham, don't you realize that we are in a period of high inflation and people are really hurting at this time. And also want to take under consideration, the city has got a budget of $2 billion. Now, if you can't find the money to do whatever you want to do, something is not right.
All right. Go ahead, Paul.
A couple things. So number one is last night, all five of those proposals came forward. Only the garbage fees were going out to we voted to move the garbage fees forward, which is only the discussion of building it. Also, the cost of service for the garbage fees has gone up considerably. We haven't raised garbage fees in like 6 or 7 years. So I think we're just going to go in and we're going to see kind of what the study is going. I know we have very competitive garbage fees. The other one we talked about is water rates, which is partly just not just a cost of service delivery. It is a, it is also a conservation issue. The parking fees did not go forward last night. The council decided to hold them. The same thing with the parks fees. So again, before we say we're going to raise those fees, the council actually didn't even take action on those last night. They delayed that discussion because they're not sure they want to go that route yet. And I can't speak for my colleagues per se, but I was one of the ones who said, hey, look, there's a couple ones that I'm not really sure I want to do these all at once. I want to take a look at how this is going. The last one is the PTSD fees, and those are the fees that go for the builders. And again, with the cost of housing and the housing crunch that we're in, I don't know if that's the most responsible move. So yes, we are considering those things. But I stand by the vote behind the garbage fees, mainly because we haven't even looked at that. We haven't even increased those fees for, I want to say, 7 years. And I think we're out of the 31 cities in Arizona, we're like 28th lowest. And I got to check that. I don't want to be misquoted or given bad information. But I know that I'm willing to at least check that out and take a look at. The other thing we're not going to do is I'm not going to vote for any proposal that raises it and jams somebody up $5 a month all at once. It'd be like a gradual, you know, buck 50 a year for a couple of years or something like that, so people know it's coming. So I'd say that's how I'd answer some of that. But the bottom line is that, yeah, inflation is going up and the cost of delivering service to a city goes up. I mean, you talk about the $2 billion budget. All right, so where do we want to cut money from? Because the answer is that if we can't collect our fees and our taxes and all those things, then we have to take a look at, we also have to make those investments into parks, into fire, into police, into roads, into all the different services, all the zoning costs that we have. We have to drainage, all those things, water delivery, all those things go into that budget. And I think we're actually pretty fiscally responsible. We run a surplus every year, but that we've run a surplus every year for the past 3 years. We've also balanced the budget 11 times in a row without cutting service. But the bottom line is that we have to be proactive in understanding what's coming down the street. So I think we're going to have a pretty good package this year, too, that I intend to support.
Okay, Paul Cunningham, we'll let you get back to your education duties. Thanks for spending some time with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
All right. Paul Cunningham, the Ward 2 Democrat on the Tucson City Council. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. A quick plug for our Friday Focus interview. Tim Steller, he just won another award from the Newspaper Association, Best Arizona Columnist at their recent ceremonies. Tim joins me on Friday. We will have the sheriff here. Sheriff Nanos will be joining us in studio, talk about a wide variety of topics, including getting more deputies for Pima County. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, thank you, Tom, for engineering and producing the show. Let's go now to CBS Network News and then the Ramsey Show. Have a great afternoon, everybody.